to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
Sometimes, apparently, we love books. But not all the time.
We love certain books more than others.
Every book is not created equal.
That's true. I have a physiognomy that results from reading lots of books.
It just makes you ugly.
By which I mean I'm fat. Because I sit and read books. And I'm not active.
That's why. This week we read Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte. Of Bronte sister fame.
Yeah. The Bronte-sauri. As they were referred to frequently by no one.
Sometimes I wonder why I even bothered to keep doing this. Just wasting my time.
That is time you will never get back.
Listen to you talk. Ugh. Okay. In case you guys didn't know, I guess, Charlotte was one of three Bronte sisters, and all of them wrote books, Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte being the other most famous of the books. Anne did write, I can't remember what it's called, Tenant at Greyfield Hall, something like that. But she's the least well-known, and I think Emily only managed to write one before she died. Anne maybe wrote a second one that didn't get published before she died, and Charlotte managed to write three, I think.
Yeah.
So, I find it interesting that they're really well-known authors, and they're all known for being authors, but none of them managed to produce much.
None of them were prolific, but that's because all of them died before their 40th birthday.
Yes, that's the other... If you ever get the chance to read up on the Brontes, or, you know, listen to a podcast about them, there's been tons of biographies. They have a really interesting and sad life. Their mom died when they were really young. Their dad was a pastor and got moved to this parish near, like, you know, the Wild Heaths or whatever. And shitty weather basically killed their entire family off one by one.
It's a place where before modern environmental conditioning and medicine, basically everybody just died.
Yeah, and Charlotte outlived everyone else.
People still lived there. I don't get
that. Yeah,
I don't get that.
But I think she watched her sister and dad and brother all die within like a year of each other.
Yeah, I think I read that somewhere.
It sounds pretty...
Sounds like a bad year.
Grim.
Yeah.
And Jane Austen... God damn it. Fuck. Jane Eyre... Oh, no. This is going to be horrible.
Oh, boy.
I'm not doing so hot.
See if I edit that out or not.
Jane Eyre is not a direct reflection of this, because it wasn't written, like, you know, post all of the tragedy. But you can find these gothic elements and these wild environmental elements in the sisters' books that I think is directly influenced by where they grew up and lived, so...
Makes sense to me.
Some fun facts about them. The reason I said the incorrect name just a moment ago is because most people relate Jane Austen with the Bronte sisters. I think mostly because they were female writers at about the same time in history, and they all wrote romances, although some people argue that Wuthering Heights is not a romance. But... they're not exactly the same. I can probably touch on that.
No, they're definitely not exactly the same. You know, well, for one thing, Jane Austen has much more of a sense of humor.
Yes.
And her books are more about society and interaction. Jane Eyre was a little more personal of a story, maybe.
Yeah, I would say that's true.
And then the gothic elements that are mostly not in Jane Austen, except for Northanger Abbey.
Yeah, where she...
Which is a weird-ass book.
At the end of it, roundly says, "Gothics are stupid."
Yeah.
"Use your reason, madam." Oh, Northanger Abbey. I'm going to have to read that sometime. And that being said, there are a couple parallels, but I think part of it's just, you know, the fact that they're kind of same place, same time. They couldn't really necessarily help it.
Yeah, I mean, the main similarity as far as things that are actually similar other than just being in a similar time and place is that some of the bantery dialogue feels kind of similar. Not exactly, because the characters in Jane Eyre are not really Austenian characters.
No.
But they do have some pretty good exchanges that, you know, like Jane and Rochester bring to mind a little bit Elizabeth and Darcy.
Mm-hmm. And Jane, like Elizabeth, is a strong female protagonist.
Right.
And not a big old weenie. So, you could kind of parallel that, too. That being said, what would you classify the genre of the book?
Well, it's definitely capital R romantic. It's 19th century romantic, unquestionably. And we've already mentioned the gothic thing, so there's some pseudo-gothic. And it might be small R romantic, too. It depends exactly how you define it, I guess.
Yeah, it depends on how you view that relationship.
I mean, the love story is significant. And I guess as far as the plot goes, it's the most important thing in the book. Thematically, I might not argue that, though.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a little bit, I don't know, like, it's not exactly coming of age because she's a little too old for that, but it's kind of the journey, finding oneself, one's place, or some of that going on.
Yeah.
There's quite a bit happening in this book. I think it's probably one of the reasons that people still know what it is. This is a slight tangent, but one of the more interesting articles I read last year was a list of, like, the top 25 or 50 best-selling books from 1912, and I think I'd heard of, like, two of them, maybe, and the illustration was just, look at how long authors' names actually live on, even people who sell really well.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, the fact that we know this book, Jane Eyre, now about 180
yeah.
years later, there's some reason it has staying power, and maybe it's just because there's so much going on in it.
People just go crazy for that shit.
People relate to it for some reason.
Yep.
It was also in, Cider House Rules, which I read a few months ago, the boys' side of the orphanage, they always read them, Hell's Bells. A Charles Dickens book. Which one was it?
Great Expectations?
Oliver Twist? Something with orphans in it.
Yeah, I was going to say, those are like the two with the orphans.
And to the girls, I can't believe I forgot that. And to the girls' side, they read Jane Eyre. So, I thought it was kind of amusing that I'm now reading it later.
We could read the Dickens book now.
I probably won't. Tale of Two Cities left a pretty bad taste in my mouth.
Oh, Dickens.
Him and his extra 200 unnecessary pages in every novel.
Yeah, well, you know, when you get paid by the word, what are you going to do?
Fair enough.
What are you going to do?
I actually get paid by the word. That's why I won't shut up on my...
This is a false fact. Ben and I have lost money doing this. That's for certain. Our plot synopsis?
Everybody is mean to Jane.
Alternately, Pride and Prejudice, but with a crazier Mr. Darcy.
Yeah.
And the everybody is mean to Jane, I mean, as all of our one-sentence plot summaries are, is wildly unfair to the book.
For the first 100 pages, I would say it's actually an accurate plot synopsis, and then after that... People are less directly assholes to Jane, and they are just indirectly assholes to Jane.
But just to give you a brief summary, if you haven't read the book and don't really care to, Jane is orphaned at a young age. Both of her parents die. She's taken in by her mother's brother, who
dies.
Loves her, because, yeah, beloved sister, he dies when she's still young, and her aunt hates her and treats her like crap, finally sends her off to Lowood School, which is a school for girls who are orphans or who have a dead parent, where she lives in pretty horrible conditions. Not only her, just everyone there.
Right.
Makes her first real friend, who then promptly dies of tuberculosis. She leaves Lowood, becomes a governess at Thornfield Hall, and that's where she meets Mr. Rochester, who's the owner of the property, and he's a bit nutty. The two of them get along pretty fantastically, though. She falls in love with him and finds out that he's in love with her and they're going to get married, but then on the day of their wedding, she finds out that he's been keeping his mad wife locked away in his attic and that he's still technically married.
Yeah, legally there's an issue.
And she's not actually terribly bothered by the fact that this woman is locked in an attic, just more so that he's married and can't marry again. So she runs off, wanders around, gets taken in by some kindly folk, gets set up as a school teacher in a village. St. John is one of the guys who took her in, wants to marry her and take her off on a missionary trip, but...
And because it's literature, it turns out the people who took her in are actually family, and she gets a giant inheritance.
Yes, that too. After she gets her inheritance, splits it with her family, refuses her cousin, decides she's going to go back and find Mr. Rochester and the two of them.
Live happily ever after. So, all of this is taking place in what you've probably gathered by now is 19th century England. Earlier rather than later, I guess, creeping up on mid-century.
Yeah.
And the story is told through the view of Jane.
Yes, I actually read that the book was originally called The Autobiography of Jane Eyre. So she's first person describing her life to you, you know, calls us dear reader at points throughout the book. And she is definitely the protagonist.
Yes, I only jokingly was able to throw out other protagonists when we were... calling it a discussion is even false.
Yeah, no one else even comes close.
The book is called Jane Eyre. It is told from the perspective of Jane Eyre, and Jane Eyre is the protagonist.
And Mrs. Fairfax is the protagonist.
And if you think that Jane Eyre is not the protagonist, then you are in Jane Eyre.
Also, you're probably illiterate. But,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, also. And dumb.
Yeah, so we already mentioned that Jane Eyre is an orphan and grows up with her horrible family. But she's not just, like, woe is me, pitiful orphan girl.
Yeah, she's in a nice household with, landed gentry type of folks.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just a-holes to her. They just don't like her for no reason, basically.
Yeah, her aunt's constantly telling her she's, like, a liar and a cheater and stuff for no reason.
The opening scene of the book is her cousin... basically making her bleed for no reason.
And then she gets in trouble.
And then her getting in trouble for it.
And she gets locked in her room where she thinks there's a ghost. Yes. And, like, has a hysterical fit.
Yeah, and then they just yell at her for being a dumb hysterical girl. And then everyone tells her she's bad and a liar, even though that she is neither of those things. Constantly.
Yeah. I don't really...
And then when they send her off to boarding school, they tell the guy at the boarding school that that's what she is, and he makes a point of telling the entire school.
Although, luckily, at that point, everyone at the school hates that guy, and so they actually like her when he calls her out. They're like, oh, she's probably cool, then.
That's kind of where things start to turn around for her, at least a little bit.
Yeah, but one of the things they don't like about her, I guess, when she's a little girl living there... is they can sense the passionate emotion in her, and, you know, ladies are supposed to be more restrained and... I don't know the word.
I guess, like, more demure, maybe. But she's really good at holding it in social settings when she has to, or has decided that she needs to.
Yeah, pretty much the only reason she doesn't lash out at her Aunt Reed is because she's so desperate for her family to love her.
Yeah.
That she tries to be really good and quiet so that they'll recognize that she's good and quiet, but then they just keep yelling at her that she's a horrible liar.
Yeah, poor Jane. She just wants some affection.
Yeah. And she gets a little bit via Bessie, via the nursery maid who alternately, like, gives her cakes and then yells at her.
Right. maybe she's just yelling at her because she thinks that she's already in trouble, and so she's just piling on.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, I'm going to get in good in the eyes of the missus.
Yeah, she kind of says that when she leaves. She said, you're my favorite. I'm kind of bummed you're leaving.
Right, yeah.
And Jane's like, oh, cool.
It's like, Mrs. Reed's actual children are shitheads.
Horrible people.
Yeah.
And Jane's most significant accomplishment living at her Aunt Reed's house before she goes to school is telling her off.
Telling that bitch off.
That's the scene.
She finally says, I'm not a liar, and you always call me a liar, and you're a horrible person, and have fun burning in hell, basically.
Yeah, and she, the thing that really gets her, she says, when I go to school, I'm going to tell everyone how horrible you were to me, and that you were never an aunt, and you were never kind to me, and that I hate you more than anyone I hate in the entire world.
Right.
And Mrs. Reed goes, oh, shit, my reputation's going to get, like, dragged through the mud. And she kind of tries to do like a, no.
I fed and clothed you. I took care of you. You emotionally abused me for 10 years.
Jane's like, fuck off.
And your son emotionally and physically abused me for 10 years, so go to hell.
And then she's somehow nice enough when she's older and her aunt is dying to go help nurse her, even though she's still abusing her when she comes back.
That's true. And she kind of shrugs it off then.
Yeah, she's like, eh. She can't change her ways now.
Yeah, whatever. John's dead, so that's okay. Partied too hard.
Yep.
Owed some folks some money. Hung himself.
Hanged himself.
Yes.
Fool.
Actually, I don't think they mentioned the method. I think he said killed himself.
Yeah, well.
Whatever.
So once she gets to Lowood, Jane is actually able to, you know, get some intellectual stimulation in there and rises to the top of her form.
Yep. Pretty smart.
Pretty easily.
And she teaches there for a couple of years before she leaves. As a teenager, so. I mean, she would have been one of the oldest girls there at 16, 17 anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, teaching at 18 at that sort of school is probably not, you know, like being a professor at Harvard when you're 18.
Right.
But still, she's a teacher. She's making money. She's doing her own thing. So.
And so she has her first friend who we mentioned who, you know, promptly drops dead. But another girl who's awfully smart.
Helen Burns,
who actually might be sounds like is kind of one of those genius kids to some degree. Like, she just reads stuff that's way advanced and remembers all of it.
Yeah, she was talking about Jane at one point is watching Helen's class learn history, and the teacher's going around to all the girls asking them questions, and no one remembers anything. She gets to Helen, and Helen knows all the answers.
Right.
But the teacher's still a jerk to her.
Yeah, and Helen gets a little bit of the Jane treatment, where she's always being told how bad she is, even though she's not actually doing anything. Her mind wanders sometimes, I guess.
Yeah, she daydreams.
Yeah.
Because, what a horrible child.
She daydreams because she's bored of your lesson that is way beneath her.
Yeah. and she's one of the first people to show Jane some affection and friendship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it starts with Jane just peppering her with questions and saying, you talk too much. But, like, after Mr. Brocklehurst, for example, dresses Jane down in front of the entire school and then says she has to sit alone for an hour and no one can talk to her. Like, the second that hour is up, Helen goes and finds her and hugs her and tells her it's okay and, you know. So, she's really Jane's first friend.
Right. And so, I have a theory, well, you know, kind of a jokey theory about Jane and being too close to her. So it's like when she's really young, her parents die, like, boom, immediately. And then her uncle takes her in, and he dies almost immediately. And then, like, 10 years passes before she really has a friend or someone who loves her again. And then Helen dies a few months later. Fast forward a few more years, and she falls in love with Rochester, and this is where the theory comes in. So he ends up, oh, spoiler alert, by the way, gets, because of a house fire, ends up getting a hand amputated and going blind. So my theory is that the closer she is to birth, the more deadly she is to those who love her. By the time she's an adult, she only causes those people to get maimed instead of getting killed.
Although it's kind of implied at the end, spoiler alert, that St. John is about to die.
True.
But he didn't really love her.
But he also
ends up being in malaria.
Yeah, he also went to India, which, once again, is pretty much laid out to be a death sentence in the book.
Like, yeah.
Why do people go live in these places?
Because she tells St. John's sister, oh, he wants me to go be a missionary with him. She's like, you would be dead within months.
She's like, I know, but I would go anyway.
What if?
What?
What is wrong with you?
What is, yeah. God, like, he's an insane religious person, so I get, like, what he thinks he's doing, but why would you do that?
Yeah. Well, you know.
There's nothing in it for you.
Well, she's smart enough to not do that.
I guess so.
Comes to her senses. Let's move on and talk about some of the other characters.
Indeed. So, we've kind of covered the first two segments. She gets to Thornfield
Hall to become a governess.
Yeah. And she meets up with the folks who live there. Mrs. Fairfax, who's the housekeeper, the head housekeeper.
She's nice. Talks a lot.
Yep.
That's about.
She seems like one of those genial, dumb people who talks a whole lot.
But, like, that you wouldn't mind spending time with.
Yeah, Jane likes her. She just notes that she doesn't bring a lot of really, truly interesting things to the table. Mm-hmm. And then she's taking care of a child named Adele, who is occasionally adorable and occasionally really obnoxious. And
mostly French.
Mostly just seems to be slightly spoiled and spout French.
Yeah.
It's more or less her character.
Jane actually says, you know, she's not particularly intelligent or talented in anything, but she made progress. And I thought, well, that's kind of a cool way to look at it, but okay. And then Mr. Rochester comes back and he said, I've noticed how much you've done with Adele, and she's not gifted or smart in any way. And I was like, okay.
Actually, one of my favorite little things in the book was after she described Adele, she did like a little aside to the reader saying, this might sound cold to you, but, you know, I'm not the parent of the child. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, not every child is brilliant and needs to have its praises sung. Children, some of them are smart, some of them are dull.
Just like Roald Dahl, the beginning of Matilda.
Deal with it. Yes, I love that.
Some kids are just idiots. And Adele's not an idiot. She's just...
No. I mean, Adele, I think what Jane loves about Adele is that she's energetic. She likes her energy.
Mm-hmm.
She seems like one of those kids who kind of makes everybody in the room smile a little bit.
And she's affectionate, too. She starts calling Jane her English mama.
Yes.
So.
And then, of course, Mr. Rochester.
Mr. Rochester. The dark, brooding Mr. Rochester.
Yes. Who is not an especially handsome man, though he does have a strong athletic build.
Yeah, I liked when Jane first saw him and said if he had been really handsome, she would have been super uncomfortable around him. But because he was kind of ugly, she was, like, okay with it.
I feel like he's not even described as being all that ugly.
Well, one of her cousins...
yeah, that's slash true. Sisters,
Jane draws a picture of him, and she goes, who's that ugly man?
That's true.
She's like, oh, just someone I came up with.
I think he just has a mean face.
Yeah, I didn't imagine him as being, like, hideous or anything. But, like, just strong features that are not strong, like, in a handsome way,
right.
But just strong.
Right.
Kind of thing. Like, you would someone look at his face and go, yeah. I remember that face.
Someone you'd describe as craggy.
Yeah.
Which is one of my favorite words for describing a man's face.
He's just kind of manly physique.
Yeah.
Sort of guy, you know?
I think he is. He's described as manly a few times, actually. He's a manly man. He's not a pretty boy. He's a manly man.
But he's also, like, surprisingly kind of goofy.
He is kind of, yeah. He's a little out there. He's very, I mean, he's passionate. He's kind of weird and gruff before you get to know him.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can draw him out a little bit, like, he's kind of a sarcastic, kind of goofy, kind of, like, given to passionate exclamations, given, like, wordplay.
Uh-huh. One of the things I did like about him, though, is, you know, Jane is technically beneath his station, but he doesn't care because, you know, she's one of the first people who's ever talked to who can match him on intelligence, and who isn't just playing the yes woman to him, I guess.
Right.
And that really interests him, because he likes being on this equal footing with somebody.
Yeah, that was one of their very first conversations. He uh-huh. said, well, we can talk as equals. That's why I consider you an equal. Which is kind of awesome.
Yeah. I mean, not to keep relating the book back to Pride and Prejudice, I'm going to try not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But Mr. Darcy and Elizabeth kind of had the same sort of interaction, but he's totally hung up on the class difference and, like, won't even, you know.
Yeah, he has to talk himself into getting past that eventually.
I'll marry you, even though everything about your family sucks. Yeah,
exactly.
And Mr. Rochester's like, let's get married. And she's like, what about Blanche Ingram? And he's like, I can't fucking talk to her.
That shallow bitch, who cares?
You guys
gonna
marry her? Whatever.
I was just trying to make you jealous.
Yeah. By the way, his supposed engagement to a rich woman is entirely to make Jane jealous.
Yes.
Because
he's kind of a troll.
to get himself out of it, he pretends that he loses most of his fortune and goes and tells them. And then they're like, we don't want it. Have anything to do with you anymore.
Yeah, they suddenly get real cold.
And he's like, ha ha ha.
And he's like, la 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 la.
My favorite Mr. Rochester moment, which just made me laugh because he's just so weird, is he dresses up as an old gypsy woman. He's out of town on business for a couple days, like while his rich friends are staying at the house. And he dresses up as an old gypsy woman and shows up and says he has to see all the single ladies by themselves and is reading their futures or whatever, but really he just, you know, he's friends with them, so he's telling them things that are shocking for a stranger to know.
Oh,
but
you like this man.
Yeah. Just messing with them.
Yeah.
And then he calls Jane in, even though she doesn't really want to go in because she thinks it's, like, BS.
Right.
And calls her in and spends pretty much the entire time trying to get her to admit that she's a crush on him. And she won't do it. And then finally he, like, gives up and,
just reveals himself.
Yeah, he's like, it's me! She's like, I knew there was something weird about you.
I knew that gypsy woman wasn't a gypsy or a woman.
But I was talking to a friend about this book and she'd never read it. And I said, well, if you do, Mr. Rochester is hilarious, and I explained the gypsy woman thing, and she said, is he 12? Like, pretending to be a stranger, and like, do you like Mr. Rochester?
Do you like Mr. Rochester? Oh, that sounds like a woman's voice.
I was like, what a spaz. Like, and then I love how he just carries on with the pretense of marrying Blanche Ingram up until Jane, like, has to leave the next day.
Yeah.
And she's finally like, no, screw that, I'm not leaving. And he's like, oh yeah, I was kidding, I meant to marry you anyway.
Yeah, by the way.
This entire time, I've been planning on marrying you. What?
That's what it took to convince her, though.
Yeah. Well, because she gives that passionate speech about, like, being equals with him and remaining friends, and then he says, yeah, okay, let's get married.
Damn it!
Foiled again!
So, eventually, at the wedding, they have one of those dramatic, if anybody has a reason, moments, and, well, this would make him a bigamist. Oh, crazy wife locked in the attic. And the woman that we thought was the crazy woman is actually just her caretaker and taking all the heat.
Yeah.
But it does explain why she's getting paid, like, way more than a servant's salary.
She's being paid a ton. Yeah, so we find out that Mr. Rochester married this woman 15 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
And her family knew that she had some kind of mental problems because I think her mother was, like, locked away.
Right.
But they, like, wanted his money and stuff, so they got married anyway. And then he realized pretty soon after they got married that he'd done a stupid thing.
Yeah.
And they're in Jamaica, and he takes her back to England, where pretty much no one knows that he's married, because his own father, knowing that she's, like, mentally ill, won't tell any polite society that he got married. And he locks her away in the attic and takes care of her, but basically doesn't tell anybody about her so he can keep running around in his social circles without...
Yeah, well, he basically wants to find...
the stigma.
He wants to find the love of his life, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't do that if people know he has a wife.
Yeah.
Because there are legal issues.
Yeah.
Entanglements.
And because it's, you know, the 1800s, I guess you can't just get divorced.
Yeah.
But divorce was around. I don't know what that was about.
I don't know.
Maybe either. He didn't want to divorce her because then he'd have to put her in an institution.
He did seem to feel like he had an obligation to make sure she was taken care of, at least. Because he was kind of hiding the problems she was causing around the house.
Even though she tries to burn him alive in his bed.
Right. And even at the end, when she's dancing on the roof while the house is burning down, he runs out there to try to save her.
Yep.
Even though if she just went ahead and died in the fire, it would make his life way easier.
Yeah.
And that's where he gets wounded and loses mm-hmm. a hand and his eyesight.
And this does bring up an issue. Some interpretations of the book, when people read it, think that Mr. Rochester is just a horrible asshole locking. I mean, on the face of things, if you hear, oh yeah, this guy locked his wife in an attic for 15 years, you would be like, oh my god, what a fucking asshole.
Right.
But... you know, I was trying to think about it reasonably, thinking, is he really a jerk? Is he not? And, you know, and then I started thinking about the way people with mental illness used to be treated. And in the 1800s, you know, people were saying, oh, him keeping his wife in his home and taking care of her instead of sending her off to a more remote place or into an institution is actually really kind of him.
That's how
a couple people say that in the book.
Yeah, that's how the book presents it. And the moral quandary presented in the book is more one of, well, maybe you should have been more forthcoming about what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
There was never really any question of whether it was okay to lock her away to begin with.
But to a modern audience, you know, if this book had been written in 2000,
right,
the issue would be, oh my god, why did you lock your wife in an attic?
Get her help.
Oh my god, what is wrong with you?
They have medication for these things now.
And I mean, there's also the issue of some people like to read it and wonder, was she actually mentally ill?
Mm-hmm.
Or was she just not a proper woman and that's why they just wrote her off? Or, I mean, there's a whole bunch of different crap you can bring to it.
Yeah, though the depiction of her having crazy, twisted, like, monster features was...
yeah.
Like, that was mentioned and then didn't really come up again.
It does sound like she probably has some sort of mania.
Yeah.
And...
well, she has violent tendencies. She's someone who might have gotten locked away even in the 21st century.
Yeah.
Who knows? I tend to lean towards the side of that's how they treated those things in the 19th century, and by those standards he was trying to be better than average, actually. Though if you want to disagree with that, I don't know if I can really take you to test.
I mean, it does sound really shady.
Right. And there's really only one more major character left to touch on.
Okay, yeah.
And that's When she leaves after finding out that he's already married because she can't marry him, and I guess it sucks too much for her to have to hang around. Actually, I didn't fully understand why she had to leave.
I think she was afraid that if she didn't leave, she would agree to become his mistress.
Yeah.
And she didn't want to become his mistress because that's, like, debasing herself.
Yeah, and it also made her disposable because she did mention that a little
mm-hmm.
bit.
Whereas if he married her, he had to...
yeah, she did mention that, you know, a marriage, the passion, the passionate part is like 6 months or a year.
Yeah.
And then you have to learn why you actually you have to learn why you actually want to live together or come to an arrangement where you agree just to do that. And
yeah, marriage.
That was kind of cynical.
Well, you know, back then and even today, mm-hmm. marriage does not have the greatest
right. Well, I just think it's amusing
track
that
record.
you know, one of the things that as a modern audience we take from a book like Jane Eyre or any of the Jane Austen novels, but this idea of, oh, well, you can marry for love instead of for connections. And even back then, people were like, yeah, the lovey-dovey part lasts for like maybe a year. And then you just kind of have to learn to accept your partner's idiocy.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a modern cynical thing when everybody supposedly gets married for love now.
Supposedly.
And they all break up 3 years later.
Yeah. I was also having a conversation with a friend pretty recently about how up until pretty much the modern day, you were basically expected to cheat on your spouse constantly with multiple people. And now that's a bad thing. Well, I mean, it was still a bad thing, I guess, back then.
If you got caught, it was a bad thing.
Not doing great. but we were having that conversation about, well, is even, like, staying true to your partner really upholding the history of marriage properly?
Well, you could probably do a whole podcast. And not an episode, like a weekly podcast on elements of marriage.
Yeah, people would yell at you a lot.
Yeah, that would be a controversial one, I would imagine. But she goes on to wander in the countryside for a couple days and then...
almost dies from it.
Almost dies from it. After like 2 days of not eating, almost dies from it. Like, come on. And then gets taken in by this family, the kind of the head of the household is... St. John Rivers.
Yes, he's a pastor, so, you know, he's doing his Christian charity bit.
Yeah, and he's the, he's a, like, really amazingly good-looking.
Yes.
Like, really smart.
Mm-hmm.
Really, now this is where I don't necessarily agree with all the descriptions, but he's presented as being, like, a morally impeccable person.
Uh-huh.
But he's really cold. Like, it's all out of duty and obligation.
Uh-huh. Whereas, you know, Mr. Rochester is kind of probably a little ugly and, like, super passionate and...
Oh, are they foils?
And, like, sometimes... Yeah, it's like, sometimes... not sometimes. Insults people fairly often.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, Adele, get out of here. I don't like kids.
Everyone's a little mean to Adele.
Yeah.
Get that brat out of here.
But St. John is different than that, but then whereas Mr. Rochester can be really warm, because, you know, when he's telling Jane he loves her, he's not doing it in a very, yes, I doth love thee. He's like, oh my god, I must have you, you're right. The best.
He keeps pulling her in and kissing her and...
yeah, like telling her that he adores her.
Being very demonstrative.
Wants to give her tons of money.
Oh my god, and you're so beautiful. And she's like, okay, now I know you're lying. Because yeah, you didn't used scene. To say that.
I'm not that beautiful. Everyone knows
he's
it.
He's like, whatever, I want to put you in pretty colors and just look at you. It's like, oh, you, Mr. Rochester.
You're so silly.
You're so sappy.
Yeah, he is totally a romantic. But St. John is not like that.
He is the anti-romantic.
Yeah.
He ends up proposing because he needs a partner to come be his missionary help in India. And it would look weird if it was two single people who were not closely related. Yes.
That's his...
So, we gotta get married, so you should come with me, but you gotta get married. And she's like, well, I'll come with you, but I won't get married.
And then he says, no, it's not proper. And he says, but, you know, it's your duty, you have to follow God's calling, and as a missionary, I have to have a wife, and temperament is situated to doing this work, so you should do this. But none of his arguments are all emotional, they're all just very... obligation
yes oriented. Yes, and she is going, well, first of all, I'm not convinced that God is calling me. Second of all, I don't want to marry you if we don't love each other. And third of all, I'll still go.
Yeah, I mean, we're cousins, isn't that good enough? You
yeah,
supposedly calling me your third
your
sister.
Youngest sister. Yeah. My cousins who are now my... I've been calling them the cousin sisters and cousin brother. And nope, not good enough. Has to fit his definition of it.
And she tells him no 3 or 4 times.
Oh, he just keeps coming back for more. He
does not give up.
He does not take no for an answer.
He just kind of starts being mean.
Yeah, he starts acting colder, though it seems like no one really notices other than Jane.
Yeah, the thing that upsets her is she, you know, like we were saying, always wants affection, and his sisters, her cousins, give her that affection. She really loves that, and they get along great, but she wants it from him, too, and when she's refusing to marry him, he's emotionally distancing himself from her, and that's what really hurts her, is because she's a person who really wants affection and validation from other people.
Thanks. That's kind of, I mean, not to leap ahead, but that's kind of one of the themes of the book, I think, is just Jane searching for affection.
Mm-hmm.
And the importance of having a place and being accepted by people.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we get into some of our issues here?
Yeah, so we already talked about the mental illness issue. Let's talk about feminism.
What? We're going to talk about feminism?
We never do that. Nonsense.
No way.
This is the first book in several weeks where there are multiple female characters, more female than male characters, and that's pretty awesome. It made me happy.
Right, Gabs is ready for one.
I didn't even realize it until about halfway through, and then I went, wait a minute. Like, Mr. Rochester's basically the only guy of import so far.
Yeah.
That's awesome! But one of the reasons a lot of people really love this book is they see Jane as kind of a proto-feminist heroine, where she's intelligent, she wants to make a living on her own. People are shocked when she says, you know, I want to work. And after she comes into her inheritance, she still wants to work, and
mm-hmm.
that surprises people. And she doesn't want to be given stuff. She wants to earn it.
Right, And yeah, she doesn't just want to be an equal. She demands to be an equal.
Uh-huh. She's so uncomfortable marrying Mr. Rochester at the halfway point because he's trying to give her all these riches, and she feels like that puts them on unequal footing.
Yeah, she says, I'll marry you, but I'm still going to be the governess because I'm going to earn my keep, damn it.
Yeah, don't give me all this stuff. And at the end, and I would argue that Mr. Rochester did not necessarily have to be maimed for them to become equals.
Right.
But
she could have just shown up with her fortune. That would have been good enough.
Yeah, I was kind of like, oh, come on. I guess he got some of his sight back, so.
Right.
Wasn't a total loss, but at the end, she's much more comfortable marrying him because she views them more as equals than she did the first time they were going to get married.
Oh, if anything, she has the power at the end.
Uh-huh.
Because he's maimed.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still, you know, he still is who he is. He's still a mentally powerful guy and probably got most of his confidence back once she came back.
Because
he was kind of pitiful.
Yeah, but
they were reintroduced to each other there.
She helped him out.
Yeah. So I guess it's kind of proto-feminist.
Yeah, because feminism wasn't really around.
Right.
But, and then it's also, you know, this woman willing to declare that she is passionate.
Mm-hmm.
And talks about her emotions. I think there's actually a passage in the book that says something about how women have just as great of passions as men.
Right, yeah.
And that's, you know, an equality of the sexes argument right there.
And we do have a man brain, a Dracula man brain moment.
There was a man brain moment.
When St. John tells her she has the brain of it, to equal any man, but still has the heart of a woman.
No one likes St. John, so.
Yeah,
but well, he says doesn't even matter.
Well, he could have hung out with the Dracula guys.
Yeah, they would have loved him.
Yeah, they would have. I'm like, wow, he's so smart and
handsome and
moral, and probably he could just step into Dracula's presence and the god radiating off of him would have started melting the guy's skin off his face.
He probably wouldn't have proposed to Lucy, though.
No, probably not.
He'd have been like, you are too weak.
He would go after the Count as a matter of duty.
Yeah.
Maybe they wouldn't have liked him. I think they would have realized he was a douchebag.
Nobody likes St. John.
Though he would have stayed up all night and actually...
That's true.
Kept him, yeah.
He wouldn't have fucking fallen asleep or, like, not shown up or whatever. That's very true.
So he probably does have some value in the right setting. So a lot of religious implications to this book. The editions we read had a foreword to the second edition by the author using her
pen initials. Names.
Yeah, which I want to look up real quick because it was still CB, but it was Currer Bell.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, Currer? Is that even a name?
No.
Probably not. But she said, you know, some people have read this book and been offended, and I'm not really criticizing religion, you know, like, religion and morality are two separate things, believe it or not. So, with that in mind, if you still want to be offended, be my guest.
Uh-huh.
But definitely the more, like, rulesy religious people in this book are not at all likable.
Right.
Mr. Brocklehurst, who's all about, well, I have to enforce good religious moral values on these girls, so I'm going to force them to live in... They're not going to have enough food, and they only get one outfit, and...
They don't get proper coats, but they have to walk to church 2 miles in the snow.
And then they all end up, like, they get sick, and, like, half the girls die.
Yeah, like, literally half the girls die, and it's a huge scandal, and all these other people take over the school and give them better living conditions.
And on top of that, he's a giant hypocrite, because his own family is walking around in furs and luxuriant, elegant clothing.
Yeah.
And, St. John is presented as being... he's not very likable, but he's presented actually more as, like, almost not even human.
Yeah, I mean, he does his Christian duty, helps people, mm-hmm. he wants to spread the word or whatever, but, yeah, he's just...
He has no warmth.
Yeah.
Or Eliza, actually, the Reeds, when she goes back, because this is redesigned, Eliza, the older daughter, is all about duty and...
Rules.
She's a super religious type, too. Spends hours in prayer, ends up becoming the head of a convent, and is super cold.
Yeah.
And actually, kind of an awesome fuck you speech to her younger sister at one point.
For being such a worthless piece of crap.
Right, which was kind of satisfying, actually.
But then, Helen Burns, she is religious in the sense of, you know, she's suffering but believes that there's something better after she dies, and she's a really kind and warm person, but she's not this person who's taking a position of power within the structured church. And
right, yeah. And honestly, to even that, to me, read a little strangely, because her lot in life was so bad. And then she'd say, well, it's okay, because this is what God has chosen for me. I'm like, it's not okay.
Yeah.
Like, it's not okay to be mistreated just because you have faith.
And Jane really liked Helen, but she never quite bought into that.
Mm-hmm.
She always kind of disagreed with Helen when she said those sorts of things.
And so, that being said, Jane, well, part of it is, like, the upbringing at Lowood. You do a lot of praying and churching, but... Even late in the book, like, she prays in a moment of crisis.
Uh-huh.
I mean, she has some sort of faith, and the message of the book seems to be that faith is not bad, but that sometimes church is. Again, when you get into, like, the rules instead of the actual morality and humanness of the situation... That seems to be the criticism more than anything.
And I wonder how much of that is tied into the fact that their own father was a pastor. Mm-hmm. Charlotte Bronte's father was a pastor.
Yeah, I'm sure she knew some folks. Whatever she thought about her father and his congregation, I'm sure that he occasionally had guests who were pretty unbearable.
Yeah.
As the super uptight religious tend to be. It's okay, anyone who's like that has not been listening to us since about the second minute of any episode.
True. so we talked about
sexual.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. So Mr. Rochester, kind of in his attempt to find love after he locks his wife away, runs off and has multiple mistresses around the continent.
Yes.
And I think the English-centric pride is also there, because, you know, he's with a German woman and a French woman and someone else, but, you know, Jane, the good English woman, is the...
Probably an Italian
right
woman.
Right one. Yeah. And then his first wife is Jamaican.
Mm-hmm.
So you have all these, like, bad exotic women, and then the good, upstanding English woman.
Yes.
And actually, it was the French woman who finally convinced him that he needed to find love and not just another mistress.
Not just sex.
Yes.
And I was actually surprised by how straightforward he was talking about the French woman, and how he took Adele in because his mistress told him that Adele was his child, and he thinks that's BS, but he's just going to take care of her anyway. And I went, oh, whoa, that's just him straight up saying, yeah, it's possible she's my child. So he said,
uh-huh,
we did have sex, essentially.
Right, yeah.
And he's not trying to hide it when he's telling Jane that story. And then he admits his other mistresses later on, but I was surprised by how openly sexual Mr. Rochester was.
Yeah, I wonder if that was common or uncommon. I mean, presumably a wealthy bachelor guy probably had mistresses sometimes, mm-hmm, and people probably knew about it. I don't know if it was acknowledged, though. That's the part where I don't have enough knowledge about the time period to know what they would have done.
Well, usually, you know, in like a stereotypical romance set back then,
right,
they would both be virgins or whatever.
Yeah, right.
But Mr. Rochester is not even close.
Right. Or the one who wasn't a virgin would be like the widower whose wife died young and he's only, you know, 35 and ruggedly handsome.
Yeah. and the scoundrels running around having sex outside of marriage are...
That's true, like...
Bad people.
What's his name? Wickham.
Wickham, yeah, Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah.
And Jane doesn't really judge him for that too much. She's just like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's true. She's, no, all right, that's what you did. She doesn't care. She
doesn't moralize at all.
She loves the man, not his deeds.
Yeah.
And then social issues we touched on a little bit already. You know, the idea of different stations being able to marry.
Mm-hmm.
Though, to expand on that just a little bit, you know, one of the kind of throwaway pieces of information that later becomes a plot point is that Jane's mother was from a wealthy family, married a poor guy, got disowned, and then when she meets up with the rest of her family, the wealthy relations end, mm-hmm, up leaving her the money after all.
Yeah.
We didn't really mention Miss Ingram and the rich folks earlier, but they were all kind of snooty.
They looked down on Jane because,
yeah,
she doesn't have money or social standing.
I mean, especially Blanche Ingram. Yes. Miss Ingram. Because she does that. She looks down at everybody, even the other rich people.
Yeah.
Like, she was playing that trailing game, which seems to be basically a game where you start talking to someone about something that they're not really knowledgeable about.
Oh, yeah.
And then kind of trying to cut them down without letting them, without them realizing that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
Sounds like a really cunty game to me.
I know, she was a bitch.
She was. And that was like the very first scene with her too, so I hated her from the outset.
And that was one of the things that's cool about Mr. Rochester is, you know, according to social standing, Blanche Ingram is young, beautiful, rich, smart, even though she's kind of a bitch.
Right.
But you would think that he would want to marry her, but he isn't interested at all.
Yeah, he sees through her bullshit big time.
Yeah, he's just playing along because he wants to marry Jane.
Yep. So let's see, any other moments in the book that we want to touch on?
Yeah, let's see here.
And Actually, I don't think
so. I guess not. Now that I'm looking at it.
Look, we hit them today.
I guess there was your one...
Yeah, so, you know, this is not so much a plot point. This is just me being silly, but multiple times throughout the book, they referred to, you know, things opening, but they never use the word opening. They always say unclosing.
Yes.
Unclosed his eyes. Unclosed the door.
Seriously.
Yeah.
The first time I saw it, unclose your eyes. What the hell is that?
I know. Why, huh? That's confusing. That's confusing to me. And physiognomy, which yes. I brought up early in the podcast, also was a word that you don't usually see these days that appeared multiple times.
Yeah, and just in case anyone's curious, physiognomy is studying people's features and learning about their character from the way they look.
Yeah.
So when people say you have a bad physiognomy, that means, you know...
You have a mean face or something.
Yeah, like your nose is too narrow, your chin's too small, or whatever, and that means you're, like, stupid and weak. And
yeah.
If you have a broad brow and a whatever.
Oh, they were all about foreheads in this book.
Yeah. Oh, one thing I was going to bring up that I forgot in the feminism section that kind of has to do with physiognomy is Jane's looks.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's not ugly, but she's just plain. She's not particularly beautiful.
She's very tiny.
Yeah, she's apparently super petite. But she has a pleasant face, but she's not pretty. And she calls herself Quakerish a couple times.
Yeah. She's kind of severe looking, I think.
But one of the things that I was looking at was making your heroine very plain was also a sort of daring or outside the box thing for Charlotte Bronte to do. Because if you did have a plain heroine, then she would usually bloom in love, or, you know, when she was in her good position and got all made up, then she was gorgeous.
Right.
Which is actually a trope in movies today still.
True.
But throughout the entire book, it's stated again and again that Jane is just looks how she looks and she's not.
She's a plain Jane.
Exactly. which apparently was kind of a ballsy thing.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I have one more point of interest. Pilot the dog.
Yeah, Pilot.
Pilot is Mr. Rochester's dog, and when Jane first meets him, she's afraid of this giant dog! Dogs in Newfoundland. Well, since I'm going to assume a large percentage of you don't know this, our family has a Newfoundland.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you would possibly be afraid of that dog.
Because they are huge and shaggy, but they're the friendliest dogs in the world.
The dumbest, friendliest animals.
I'm going to assume he's just a big black shaggy dog, and that scared her. Right. And then she was like, oh, he's dumb.
And then it started licking her face.
Yeah.
Probably while she was still standing, since she was so tiny.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Shout out to Pilot!
What up, Pilot?
What up, Pilot?
Okay, so, strengths and weaknesses of the writing.
It's, you know, I liked most of it. I thought there were sections that were too long.
Mm-hmm.
As did you. I don't know, we necessarily thought the same sections were too long, but it's in two volumes. It's approximately 600 pages.
My version was only 424. But
that makes sense. This edition totally underutilizes its page space.
Yes, it does.
But there are certain conversations where I would get the point of the conversation, and then we'd go, like, another six pages. There were some scenes, some points of her life that went on probably a half chapter or a chapter longer than they needed to.
Lowood, growing up, and then Lowood, in my version, lasted about 100 pages, which is a full fourth of the book. And some interesting stuff happened, but not enough for me for it to be that long.
Right.
And then after she runs away from Mr. Rochester, I thought she took too long to get back to him, mostly because
I agree with that too.
I didn't like St. John, and her female cousins weren't interesting enough to fill that space.
And some of her conversations with Rochester and St. John were definitely too long.
But the Rochester Jane parts of the book were definitely my favorite. And once I hit Mr. Rochester entering the scene,
yes,
I was very engaged in the book.
When she was writing more like banter and verbal fencing type of conversations, those were good.
And Jane likes to toy with Rochester, which is which is funny. And he likes to kind of try to mischievously draw things out, and she'll never quite play along with it, which is also funny. And they're both very, very honest about things that people are usually
not honest about.
Too polite to be honest about, yeah, which is pretty funny, too.
He says, Jane, do you think I'm handsome? She just says, no, sir. Immediately, like, no pause, and she goes, oh, I guess I shouldn't have said that. And he's like, no, it's cool.
Yeah. Most people don't have the spine to say that. And so, you know, I think overall, good.
Yeah, we liked it.
I really like Jane.
I do, too. And Mr. Rochester just cracks me up nonstop.
Yeah. And so, as far as questions for the book...
Ben had one burning question.
I had one burning question. I wanted to know if they ever got to travel the world. That was going to be their big thing. He was like, we're going to get married and then we're never coming back.
Yeah, he's like, I'm taking you to France and Italy, and he's just going to take her all over the continent.
And instead, she's like, well, it's 10 years later and we have a kid and I go visit my cousin's sisters and they come visit me on, like, alternating years. And I'm like, well, say, clearly they're in the country most of the time.
Yeah. And I was wondering if that's because of his lack of a hand and his half-blindness.
Yeah, maybe he got all sulky. He's like, I don't want to go to Italy. I can't see any of it anyway.
People will be like, go!
And she was like, but you said you were going to take me to Italy. And he's like, I'm so sorry. And then they just banged.
I thought of them banging is a
little
weird.
They're pretty passionate. I think there's a lot of banging going on in this marriage.
And she did say our first child.
That's true.
So.
First of 75? I don't know.
Oh, Lord.
That's a lot.
Could be like George III. I think he had 16 children.
It's a lot of children. And so, is that...
I think that's it.
All right. What you reading right now?
Oh, crap. I forgot to look up the author's last
name.
Uh-oh. Well, I'm reading Sex with the Queen by Eleanor...
Something or other.
Something.
It's a book called Sex with the King.
Same author.
Ah, there we go.
Yeah, she wrote the King one first and then wrote the Queen one.
Okay.
It's essentially just following a bunch of queens who had affairs.
Okay.
And how those affairs were perceived and... how they ended up and all that.
Sounds interesting.
It is. It is pretty interesting.
Actually, I almost snagged the Sex with the King book when I saw it.
My main criticism as a historian,
yes,
of the book is that it's kind of pop history.
Okay.
And so sometimes she takes solid stances on things like this happened.
Okay.
When it's a lot more in question, she doesn't do any of the this could have happened.
Right.
She just goes, it happened. And, like, especially when I was reading the Anne Boleyn section, I was like, excuse me.
Excuse me.
But it's still fun to read, and it's making me really want to read about some of these queens, so.
All right, then.
I'd recommend it.
Well, it's a success. I read The Star Beast by Robert Heinlein, which was one of his YA books, and it was fun. Boy has a gigantic alien pet that has been in the family for generations. Aliens come to the planet, turns out that the pet is actually intelligent, and it just, their childhood's really long, so, turns out the pet has been raising John Thomas's for several generations, and refuses to leave the planet without him.
Aww.
It was a cute story.
So I think that's it.
Yeah, so if you have anything that you've a burning need to talk to us or dress us down or whatever.
Yeah, if you, like, hate Mr. Rochester.
Yeah, if you hate me.
Oh.
Well, you know.
Yes.
I can take the abuse. You can leave a comment on our website, novelideaspodcast.com.
You can email us. Our friend Rhea did email us at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, so if you're not Rhea, don't do that, because she wants to be exclusive.
The only person.
You can tweet us at Novel Ideas Pod.
And you can find us pretty easily on iTunes.
Yeah. And, like, leave comments and ratings and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And subscribe! But you already do that, right? All right. So, Next week, we will be doing The Night Circus by Aaron Morgan Stern.
I think it was published in 2010 or 2011.
It's recent-ish.
Very recent.
We've had some folks recommend it to me offline.
Yeah, and Anthony recommended it to us online.
All right, perfect. There we go.
So that's what we'll be doing then.
Great. Then we'll see you next time.
Bye.
You worry there might not be anything at all inside. That's your word.